Ted here. We did not mention it during the upcoming show, but if you like what you heard here today, Kai will be doing a deep dive on many aspects of the Shave the Peak program on July 29th. We'll put up a link in the blog posting. Enjoy the show. Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. This show is for the week of July 14th, 2021. So it seems to me that people often can use electricity without being very aware of where the electricity comes from or what is at stake in the creation of that electricity. As we move more and more into the great energy transition, the Green New Deal and all that kind of stuff, we see a lot of windmills and solar panels being put up. But often enough, those are sort of outside of the range of most people's experience. I mean, that's kind of this passive thing you watch happen out on the horizon. And the energy production system is kind of this big anonymous thing that just happens when you throw the electric light switch. But in fact, I think one of the things that the transition of the green energy transition is teaching us is that we are all consumers of electricity, and that we all, every time we turn on the air conditioner or the TV, we're creating demand for electricity. And as we dive deeper and deeper into this stuff, we realize that we're playing a role in that energy system. It turns out that, so I guess my point being that there's ways that you can consciously interact with what appears to be otherwise this opaque system. You as an individual person can have some input to how that system works. And the idea is that we're heading into August. And here in New England area, we've had a terrible July. It's been cold and rainy, it seems, forever, right? At some point, though, we expect to get back to where you're going to need air conditioning. And on those days where everybody turns on the air conditioning, we tend to use the most inefficient, dirtiest power plants. And that is a leverage point for people to get involved in cutting down greenhouse gas emissions. So that's kind of a long way around the story, but we're fortunate to be joined by an expert who knows a lot more about these things than I do. And so we're looking forward to chatting with Kai Salem, who is the policy coordinator for a nonprofit here in the Northeast called Green Energy Consumers Alliance. How you doing, Kai?
Hi, Ted. I'm well.
Good, good, good. Glad to have you here. So tell me the little story about peak demand. Did I get it more or less right? Or how would you tell the story? What should people know about their opportunities to take action here?
Well, I really like that you started with talking about consumers and how consumers interact with our energy systems, because that's what Green Energy Consumers Alliance is all about. We're about empowering consumers to make smarter and greener energy choices, but also working through policy and other forms of collective action to make the energy systems work better for consumers. We want our energy systems to be greener and more affordable, and our transportation systems, our electric grid, our buildings, all to be working better for consumers. We're based in Massachusetts and Rhode Island, so consumers here in the Northeast, as we speed the transition to a low carbon future. So indeed, as we learn more about the green energy transition, we've known for a long time that energy efficiency is super important. Energy efficiency is the cheapest tool we have to reduce emissions because we can cut down on our emissions just by using less energy, which costs less and cuts down on the fossil fuel based electricity and natural gas that we're
consuming. And that's when you say energy efficiency, that's essentially what you're meaning at the is using electricity wisely, right? And if you can buy the appliance that gives you the most operation with the least use of electricity, right? It's that mindset that is the virtuous thing that you want to develop, right?
Yeah, energy efficiency and energy conservation, two related ideas. Efficiency, I think, tend to think of as choosing appliances or approaches that do the same amount of work with less energy. Conservation is really just, you know, we don't need to have our lights on right now. Let's turn them off. But now we're coming to a new stage. We do a pretty good job on efficiency and conservation here in the Northeast. And we're starting to really double down on the idea that when we use energy matters. And it's easiest to see in the electric grid. You already got at this, but just a few times a year, we call these peak days. And these are usually on the hottest or coldest days of the year. Everyone across New England, where we're all on one regional electric grid, everyone across New England turns on their air conditioners, or in the wintertime turns on electric heating systems if they have them, as well as lights, ovens, etc. And this tends to be when people are getting home from work, but offices or stores are still open. And also in the wintertime, it might be getting dark, so people are turning on more lights, but it's still hot. So, and again, this is in the summer, in the late afternoon when it's still hot. So in the summer, we're looking at the 6 to 8 p.m. range. In the winter, around that as well, 6 to 9 p.m. And
I mean, you're saying that we know, or the utilities know, that like from 6 to 8 p.m. on a hot day, there's going to be an incredibly high demand for electricity, way outside the norm, right? Because of these factors you're talking about. And they can predict that based on history, right?
Exactly. Every day, electric demand changes throughout the course of the day. People, of course, are not going to be using as much electricity at 4 in the morning as they are at 9 a.m. or at 9 p.m. But this becomes even more extreme on one of these really hot or really cold days. And that's why we call this handful of days a year peak days. Within those peak days, there's some peak hours. And those peak hours are responsible for a huge amount of the costs of our electric system, as well as the emissions of our electric system. And the reason that is because we have to build our entire energy system to handle just those peak days. It's kind of like a highway. We build our highways to handle the traffic jams, not to handle the 4 a.m. times.
Right.
And
right.
So we have to build our energy system. And I saw a stat recently, this was for Rhode Island a couple of years ago, but 1% of the hours in Rhode Island were responsible for 9% of the costs, and the top 10% of hours were responsible for something like 26% of the costs.
Really? That's amazing. Like out of the full year, it's only, I don't know how many hours, but 10% of the hours in the year are really drive the cost of the system to 24% of the cost of the system, which would then include all of the plants and the wires and everything. Like, that's amazing. That's really remarkable.
Yeah, and it's traditionally the way that we meet energy demand on those days is that the utility companies just buy more electricity to supply all those air conditioners that are being turned on. But what might be a lot cheaper is if we just lowered our demand on those days, thus avoiding that top 1% of hours and cutting our electric system costs down by 9%. I think a lot of us would be much more willing to do that if we all knew what an impact it could make to bring down demand during mm-hmm. those peak hours.
Now, tell me, there's two aspects then. There's the cost. Well, the price, I guess, benefit. I mean, things are cheaper if you use the electricity wisely during those peak demand days. And there are greenhouse gas emissions associated with those peak demand times, right? Is that's a fair statement?
Exactly. And the reason that greenhouse gas emissions are related to peak days, one, just because we're using a ton of electricity. So that's very simple. There's going to be more emissions if we're using more. But also because the power plants that we bring online that are offline for most of the year because we don't need them, the power plants that we bring online to supply peak electricity tend to be some of either the oldest or they're just much more fossil fuel heavy. For example, sometimes on peak days, we turn on oil power plants. We basically never have any oil or coal in New England. We just keep oil and coal power plants around here for those peak days. And we've done a really good job phasing those dirtier fossil fuels out of our system. for better or worse. You know, that's largely because of the how cheap and predominant fracked gas has become. But oil and coal really is a lot more fossil fuel intensive. And sometimes on peak days, natural gas power plants, and this tends to happen more in the winter, natural gas power plants run out of access to natural gas because it's being used to heat people's homes. Mm-hmm. And so they actually switch to burning oil. And that's a lot dirtier. And that's just how bad some of these peak days can be and our emissions intensity of the grid. So in addition to the overall, you know, we're just need more electricity, we're burning more fossil fuels to produce it, the actual emissions intensity, so per unit of electricity, how much emissions are coming from it, that goes way up on peak days.
Interesting. Interesting. So the extremes of the, use my engineering, right? The envelope of operation is the extreme corners of that envelope that we get into trouble, have the cost and the emissions. And that's so what can people do? I mean, once they've sort of comprehended this interesting fact about the way the grid works, right? They say, okay, that's fine. What can I do about it, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that people can do. And there's a lot of things that that our policymakers should be doing at a larger level. But here at Green Energy Consumers, we really like to tie our policy work with accessible consumer programs, because as a consumer, I want to know what's going on with my energy system and also know how I can make smart decisions to impact it. So we started a program called Shave the Peak. And this program alerts our participants either by text or email or both, if you want to make absolute sure you get the message. When a peak day is coming up, we focus on summer peaks, which are a little bit easier to predict. And it will let you know what time approximately the peak is going to start and what time it will end. And we'll give you some tips for how you can reduce your electricity use during that time.
So that's very specific response. You say to yourself, oh, you get a text, you say, oh boy, between 4 and 6 this afternoon, maybe I'll turn off the Nintendo for a while and we won't play Fortnite, I guess the game is, right? You save some electricity just by being aware, right? And where can people, what's the website? Where do people sign up for this marvelous notification?
You can sign up at greenenergyconsumers.org/shavethepeak. And we also have a lot more information on peak days, how you can reduce your electricity. Our goal here is really, you know, we're not trying to get people to sit in their house in the heat, in the dark, and not do a single thing. But really what we're calling upon people to do is make little changes. For example, if you were planning to run the dishwasher or run the laundry, just wait a couple of hours. If you have an electric vehicle, charge that ahead of time so that you're not drawing on your house's electricity during that key window. And as we know, air conditioning is the number one user of electricity. It's just the thing that drives all of these peaks. So one thing I might do during a peak day to avoid using air conditioning is go outside more or try to go to a public place that has air conditioning so that I'm not adding to the load at my own house.
Interesting. Have we had any days so far this year where the peak has, I mean, as I'll repeat again, I mean, the weather's been terrible here for the last several weeks of sort of continuous rain, but I remember in mid-June, we had the hottest June ever, right? In the Northeast.
Yes, this will not surprise anyone who remembers just a couple of weeks ago, June 28th, 29th, and 30th were all peak days. And those were big peaks. We call our cutoff for what a peak is 23,500 megawatts or 23,000. We kind of make the call depending on a couple of different factors. But for context, average electricity demand throughout New England is between, you know, 12,000 and 14,000 megawatts. So when we get to 23,000 megawatts, that's a big number. And the 28th, the 29th, and the 30th of June this year were all well over 24,000 at the peak. And one of them was even over 25,000 megawatts. We did see oil and coal coming online to meet that peak. And prices on the wholesale electricity grid, or the prices in the wholesale electric market were over 10 times the average for parts of the day.
That's an interesting fact for people to carry around in their head, that on these hot days, the amount of electricity the society demands is twice normal, right? Did I get that right? You said like 12,000 to 25,000. I mean, two times as much electricity. And it goes back to your point that, you know, the metaphorical highways, all the transmission lines, everything's got to be built for that kind of a load and not what happens every day. That's fascinating. And is it easy to see if there is an impact of people cutting their stuff down, or is it lost in the noise? I mean, these are enormous numbers you're talking about, right?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one thing that we are not able to do, and this is one of our most asked questions about the Shave the Peak program, we don't have a way to measure the impact of our participants on the grid. There are much larger versions of this program that folks can measure. For example, large commercial and industrial electric users do participate in demand response. Everything we're talking about here, reducing our demand in order to comply with certain grid benefits, that's what we call demand response. So some large demand response programs are actually able to bid into energy markets and are able to sell their ability to reduce their electric load in a really confident, sure way. They're able to sell that as if it is electricity.
Right. And if I could just say, I retired a couple of years ago, but the place that I used to work had tremendous energy demand, just without going into it used a lot of electricity. And on the hot days of the summer, they would, and I think this is a specific instance of what you're talking about, they would volunteer to turn down all the electricity. So now you'd be sitting in your little cubicle, you know, like a muskrat in the cubicle, and all the lights in the place would be dimmed down low, and all of the manufacturing would be quiet for 2 or 3 hours to get through the peak. And they were getting paid for that. So my follow-on question is, do you see any, what's the path for the individual consumer in their home to get paid for turning down their air conditioner? Is that on the radar screen of anyone?
Yes. So I love that example. That just perfectly illustrated what I was talking about. And one reason that individual consumers now are not able to get paid for reducing our electric use, because I personally believe that we should be paid for that, is that here in New England, we're one of the last regions in the country where, for the most part, we do not have smart meters. So there's no way to measure how well we are reducing our electric load in when there's a peak. But there are other places in the country and even other pilot programs where independent entities are aggregating a bunch of small residential consumers, measuring how much they're how well they're doing in reducing the peak, and bidding into energy markets. And that's how they can make money and then pass along some of those savings to consumers.
Just briefly, tell people what a smart grid is. I mean, what does that mean? I mean, I think I know, but you do. I mean, what does a smart grid mean for your home, right?
Yes. So the specific piece of equipment that I'm talking about here is a smart electric meter. And smart electric meters, they can also make smart gas meters, can do a bunch of different things. But the capability that I am most excited about is the ability to measure your electric usage every 15 minutes. So for the most part, we have meters that are read once a month, and all it tells the utility company is, here's how much electricity someone used in that entire month. But a smart meter will say every 15 minutes, the change in electric usage. And you can, with that much data, you can start to measure your usage against your baseline, measure it against your neighbors, even drill down and figure out what appliances are using more electricity than usual. There's so much capability, and both Rhode Island and Massachusetts currently have PUC or DPU in the Massachusetts, so regulatory processes that, if everything goes right, would end up with people in Massachusetts and Rhode Island getting smart meters.
The idea would be that you could make a graph of your own home that shows the demand every 15 minutes, and it would clearly be the demand for electricity would be low at 3 a.m. because the only thing going is your clock radio, right? And then when you wake up in the morning, put the coffee maker on, it starts to ramp up, and then you could be paid for essentially manipulating that by turning off the air conditioning, reducing the demand. That's a great, I mean, that's a good thing if we can get to it, right?
Yeah, it would also enable time of use rates where the cost of your electricity would vary depending on the time of day. And that's another great way to get paid for shaving the peak. Because if you use your electricity during the middle of the night, or if you charge a home battery or an electric vehicle or whatever it is during the middle of the night, then it will be cheaper to do that than during peak hours.
Interesting. Wow. Well, I think this is a great instance where people can begin to, what's the right word, demystify the electric grid, right? They say, I can actually be part of this. I understand what's happening. If I take these actions, there will be a benefit, right? And in the long term, it could be a financial benefit if we play our cards right. But this is a good thing, right? That the comprehension that people have about where that electricity comes from and how to interface to it. I mean, that's great.
So many benefits, from reducing our emissions, as we talked about earlier, to giving people more control over their energy bills. You know, they want to figure out why they're using so much energy in different ways they can be more efficient. And that could really enable more options in that regard.
So, Supa, tell me again the place listeners can go to sign up for the Shave the Peak text messages or emails so that they can be part of this. How do they get to it again? Remind me.
You can find it at greenenergyconsumers.org/shavethepeak. And we also have a lot of information on our advocacy to support better energy efficiency programs, time of use rates, smart meter dockets, and things like that on greenenergyconsumers.org/advocacy.
Super. Well, I tell you what we'll do is I'll put up that link on the blog that'll be associated with this podcast. That blog will be at massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, that's the Massachusetts Climate Action Network website. So you can get that way. Maybe I'll put up some additional links about, this is an interesting topic, right? How do we interact with the grid? If anyone out there has a question or a suggestion of a show we ought to be making, send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what's a hot topic. You're probably listening to this show on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Apple Podcasts or Google, whatever. We're there. Please ask your friends to listen to this show on their favorite modern podcast distribution app on their very smartphone. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close the way we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Kai, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. It's been very interesting. Really appreciate it. And everybody, go sign up for this thing. It's a good thing. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.